Welcome to the Youngevity Shareholder Call. During this call, we will be making forward-looking statements regarding Youngevity's current expectations and projections about future events. Generally, the forward-looking statements can be identified by terminology such as may, should, expects, anticipates, intends, plans, believes, estimates, and similar expressions. These statements are based on current beliefs, expectations, and assumptions, and are subject to a number of risks and uncertainties, including those set forth in Youngevity's filings with the SEC, many of which are difficult to predict. No forward-looking statements can be guaranteed, and actual results may differ materially from such statements. The information on this call is provided only as of the date of this call, and Youngevity undertakes no obligation to update any forward-looking statements contained on this conference call on account of new information, future events, or otherwise, except as required by law. It is now my privilege to turn this call over to Youngevity's co-founder and CEO, Mr. Steve Wallach.
Thank you, Alex. Hello, everyone. I want to welcome you all to the Youngevity International Shareholders Call today. Speakers on the call are myself and our President and CFO of Youngevity, Dave Brisky. Our new Vice President of International, Luke Tafuri, is also on the call with us today. We'll cover the following topics. We will highlight Q2 performance. We will provide an update on global expansion activity. We will receive a comprehensive update regarding our Sorvana FreeLife acquisition and the opportunities it provides as we expand in the U.S. and throughout Asia. We will also discuss our coffee operations. What I'd like to do now is bring Dave Brisky, our CFO and President, on the call. Dave, are you there?
Thanks, Steve. Yeah, I'm here. Do you hear me okay?
Hear you perfectly.
Perfect. All right. Well, thank you all for joining us this afternoon. We appreciate it very much. I just finished a non-deal roadshow throughout the Northeast and met with a number of new and current investors. And, one of the things that I'd like to highlight before we get into the specific numbers was the questions that kept coming up, during my roadshow meetings. And there was really three areas that those that I met with wanted to learn about. We had a couple of quarters that were a little bit lackluster in Q4 and in Q1. And so the look that I was hearing and the interest that I was hearing was, would we have a bounce back in Q2? As one thing that they would be looking for. And the second thing that they would be looking for is our international business, which we've invested significant dollars in. Will that start to perform as we had planned it to perform moving into this year? And so that was the second thing. And then the third thing, and maybe most important, would our EBITDA, we've been positive EBITDA for a number of years now, and we had a dip in Q1, would that bounce back as well? So I'm pleased to say that those three areas that seem to be the biggest questions I received among literally over 100 different investors and high net worth and institutions that I met with, I'm pleased to say that in Q2, revenues increased about $2.8 million over the first quarter. The direct selling segment revenue was up almost 7%. The coffee segment revenue was up over 9% over the first quarter, and adjusted EBITDA has rebounded and returned to a positive $745,000 versus the $1.2 million loss we experienced in the first quarter, so nearly a $2 million turnaround on adjusted EBITDA. So we're pleased to see the progress there. By no means are we thinking that we owe ourselves a pat on the back for that performance. For us, it's a beginning of what we see in the coming quarters. We see continued progress, and we feel strongly that we're back on a growth trend for the company after those two quarters, Q4 and Q1. So we feel good about that, but there's certainly a lot of work to be done, and this was the first major step in that work. So in relation to the second quarter financial results, for the first 3 months, and I'll cover the 3-month period, ended June 30, 2017. Our revenue decreased about 2% compared to last year, $41,527,000 compared to $42,500,000 for that three-month period. During the 3 months ended June 30th, we derived about 86% of our revenue came from the direct selling segment of the business, and 14% came from the commercial coffee sales. Our direct selling segment revenues decreased by about $1.5 million, or around 4%, to $35,538,000 as compared to $37 million for the three-month period ended June 30th of 16. The commercial coffee segment revenues had an increase of over $500,000, or up 9.3%, to just under $6 million for that three-month period ending June of 17, as compared to $5,481,000 for the three-month period of last year. This increase was primarily attributed to increased revenues in our coffee roasting and green coffee business, both actual areas of the coffee business, which we'll cover in a little bit more detail later in the call, showed some growth numbers. For the three-month ending June 30th, 17, gross profit actually decreased approximately 5.2% to $24.1 million as compared to $25.4 million for the same period in the prior year. And overall, gross profit as a percentage of revenue decreased to 58% compared to 59.8% in the same period. This decrease was primarily as a result of increased direct cost, which adversely impact the commercial coffee segment margins, and the we saw better performance actually on the direct selling side of the business. June 30th, 2017, our operating expenses increased about 3.6% to $24,778,000 as compared to $23.9 million for the period a year ago. Looking at a breakdown of our operating expenses is as follows. Distributor compensation expense decreased 0.7% to $16.686 for the 3 month ended June 30th, 2017, down from $16,796,000 for the same period. And this was primarily due to the decrease in revenue, as there's a direct correlation between those two items. Sales and marketing expense increased about 10% to $2.9 million for the three-month period, up from $2.6 million for the same period a year ago. The increase in marketing staff and related costs as the company is revamping its marketing content and its overall branding strategy. General and administrative expenses increased 16% to $15.2 million from $4.4 million for the three-month period ending June 30th, 2016, primarily due to increases in costs related to the international expansion, which we touched on earlier, also higher legal expenses, higher investor relation expenses, somewhat to wages and related benefits, and the amortization and stock-based compensation costs. Also, our computer and internet-related costs were up, as well as travel costs related back again to that international expansion. In addition, the contingent liability revaluation resulted in a benefit for $680,000 for last year's period. For the 3 months ended June 30, 17, total other expenses increased by $1,026,000 to $2,599,000 as compared to $1,573,000 for the same period in the prior year. Total other expenses is a net interest expense of $1,258,000, and of course that change in fair value of warrant derivative liability of $1,341,000. That is a non-cash expense directly related to the closing price of our stock, which is an inverse relationship. So our stock closed up at the end of the quarter, which created this warrant derivative liability non-cash expense, which certainly impacted the net income. For the 3 months ended June 30, 17, the company reported a net loss of $2.7 million as compared to a net loss of $109,000 for the same period in the prior year. The increase in the net loss is due to income taxes of $32.75 in 17 compared to a net loss before income taxes in 16 of $49,000, offset by a tax benefit of $545,000 in 17 compared to a $60,000 tax provision in 16. Adjusted EBITDA, which is earnings before interest, income taxes, depreciation, and amortization as adjusted to remove the effect of stock-based compensation expense, and of course that change in fair value of the warrant derivative or adjusted EBITDA decreased to a positive $745,000 for the 3 month ending June 30, 2017, compared to a positive $2.5 million for the 3 month period ended June 30th of 16. So those are the numbers. A couple of additional points I think is important to make is this year and Steve will mention some of this, that we made the move obviously to the NASDAQ, and this is our first call on the NASDAQ. And our 50-day average trading volume since we made the move to NASDAQ, we're pleasantly surprised or pleased, I should say, to see it's about four times higher than we were on the OTC markets. Given that we're comparing that period of time that we actually uplisted to June and moving into really July and August, the slower months for all stock trading, and we're comparing that to a period of time which should be higher volume months on the OTCQX, we're hopeful that we'll continue to see a improvement in the trading volume as we have post-uplist. We'll see how that works following the summer months. One of the things I'm most excited about is the quality of the meetings that have taken place since our move to the NASDAQ. Certainly a more sophisticated investor group has come to our attention, and we've had opportunities to present to funds and institutions that really were not able to participate in our company in terms of an investment, and so we're pleased with those types of meetings and the number of non-deal roadshow opportunities that have been presented to us that we will certainly be working very, very hard as we move into the third quarter and as we round out August, September, and October specifically to continue to hit the roads and hit the streets to tell our story. We think we've got a strong story to tell, and we're appreciative of the new opportunity that the NASDAQ markets has presented to us. In addition to that, and maybe a little bit of a surprise to us, is our acquisition model seems to have lifted in terms of deal opportunity because of this move to the NASDAQ, possibly because our stock is maybe more considered a real currency at this point. And so it seems like the interest in our acquisition model is getting larger in terms of the revenue-sized companies that are coming our way. We did complete our largest single acquisition in the acquisition of Free Life Ladara, and we integrated that on July 1, and that was the largest acquisition that we've done to date. And it seems that since we've moved to the NASDAQ that we've had opportunities that are a bit north of that coming our way. That's not to say that, you know, one of these are imminently closing. I don't want anything misleading here, but the opportunities in terms of revenue and the size of the acquisitions that are interested in our model have certainly gotten to a larger scale, and that's encouraging because we believe it's a very, very important part of our model. And Luke Tafuri, who's on this call, will talk further about that. Additionally, the percentage of international sales, which is one of the guide points that many of the institutions and funds were very keen in looking at, knowing that that is a very, very key part of our growth strategy, really over the coming years, if not in for the coming decade. Last year, you know, we had basically only 9.3% of our revenue was derived from international sales. And interestingly enough, that was the average for the year, but Q4 and Q1 and Q2 of this year, that number started to hover up over about 10% versus 8% for the same period last year. So we're seeing that movement happen. And based on the numbers that we have, and you know, we have to be cautious here because we don't have our bottom line numbers. We only have visibility to the top line revenue. But our top line revenue in July and for almost half of August seems to be tracking with higher percentage of international sales, certainly above that 10% number. So, you know, we're happy to see that, and you're going to hear more about that coming from our CEO, Steve Wallach. Before we turn it back over to Steve, I encourage all shareholders to review our financial numbers posted on virtually all financial sites, which you'll see coming up either late today or early tomorrow. And with that, I would like to turn the call back over to our CEO, Steve Wallach, to give us an update on specifically the global expansion efforts. Steve?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you good.
Okay, all right.
You every time.
So thank you, Dave, for that comprehensive finances. You know, in Q2, we accomplished a great deal, and I definitely feel that it set us up well for the future. You know, I'm pleased to see us gain back sales growth in Q2 as they've went through the financials and explained to us all, and to bring our adjusted EBITDA back into positive territory. But really, the bigger accomplishments took place in the quarter that have not yet shown up in Q2's numbers, but we anticipate a payback in the quarters to come. You know, the NASDAQ uplisting that Dave, that we've all talked about, but Dave mentioned again earlier as well, the NASDAQ uplisting is a significant milestone for Youngevity, and we just began trading on the NASDAQ June 21st, and as Dave mentioned, trading volume has increased by about four times during that period of time from previous to the NASDAQ uplisting. So we're definitely optimistic and pleased about that. We believe strongly that this move will ultimately help us unlock shareholder value, which was certainly one of the key drivers to uplist to one of the major exchanges that we've talked about on these very calls in the past. Talking about the acquisition model, again, Dave mentioned a bit about that, but I'll give you some examples here. The Bella Vita acquisition is now fully integrated into Youngevity and is now producing revenue, and you should see a greater impact in this in the coming quarters. We are now open for business and shipping products in the following Asian countries, in large part due to this Bella Vita acquisition as well: Malaysia, Indonesia, Hong Kong, Taiwan, Singapore, Japan, and the Philippines. The FreeLife Ladara acquisition was completed or was signed on June 19th and became fully integrated on July 1st. We're definitely excited to combine our newly opened office in the Philippines with their office in the Philippines that has been operational for about 12 years. So a lot of synergy there as well due to the FreeLife Ladara acquisition and partnership. Mexico, we'll talk about Mexico. Mexico continues to grow at a nice pace and contributed $1.2 million in revenue for the quarter. We're currently looking to expand our distribution capabilities in this market due to what we're seeing and the growth that we're seeing. And we're planning another large event in October. So definitely we're excited about that, and we continue to drive momentum into the region. We've talked about further expansion into Latin America, and you'll hear more about that in the near future, I believe, as well. To support this major growth driver, we proudly have announced the addition of Luke Tafuri to our team. Luke comes to Youngevity with a tremendous amount of international experience. I think Luke has over 20 years of experience in direct sales and has a tremendous amount of experience in international expansion and international management of many of these markets. And so I'm excited to bring Luke onto the call. Luke, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me, Steve?
Perfectly. Thanks, Luke. I'm going to turn this over to you, and please tell us a bit about yourself.
Perfect. Well, thank you. good afternoon. And as you know, Steve mentioned, you know, I've recently been hired as the VP of International Sales and Operations at Youngevity, and I'm proud of that. A little more background on myself, you know, like Steve mentioned, I have over 22 years of experience in the direct selling industry, of which 17 years have been in the international space. I've personally opened and managed 26 countries across the world, including Europe, Asia Pacific, and South and Central America, to name a few, where I managed the growth and profitability of each of those countries. So that was an important part of the business. I'm excited for the tremendous upside of the international markets, like Steve and Dave mentioned. With 9.3% of the sales in 2016 coming from the international markets, it leaves just a bright future for the international markets. And some of the acquisitions will really help towards that. Many of the direct selling companies, the larger ones, when they find once they go international, their international sales either equal or even eclipse their U.S. sales. So it's a very exciting time. I started at the perfect time. Longevity's infrastructure is solid, which is important for launching international markets. There's lots of talented employees as well as field leaders, and the leaders are really what drive the market. A lot of those leaders I've spoken to have connections in these international markets that we're either open in or pursuing or recently acquired markets through the acquisition. So very excited about that. One other thing I think is tremendous for Longevity is the diverse product line. They have so many different verticals that will appeal in these international markets because not each country likes nutritional products or maybe they're into cosmetics, so they have different wants and needs. And with Longevity's, again, diverse product line and verticals, we can do tremendous things in these markets. It also acts as an incubator for future products, so you can continually introduce new products down the road to keep the field excited for many years to come. Prior to joining Longevity, I met with Steve and Dave and discussed the acquisition technique they have, the strategy they have, and as I began to understand it, I realized, this is a tremendous help for the international markets, because it helps not only the current markets by increasing the distributor base and product line, but it will help accelerate the global expansion, as seen with the recent acquisitions of Free Life and Bella Vita, where they quickly added several of those Asian markets to their portfolio, and that can cut months and even years off product registration and launching in a market, which if you were to start from scratch again, that would take a longer period of time. My current focus will be evaluating our international markets to make sure that we have the correct staffing and procedures in place to operate efficiently while producing both growth and profits. Some of the challenges I've had in the past where we've had a good operations person on the team but suffered from the sales side. So you'd have a smooth running operation but no sales. And the opposite, where you'd have a great sales leader in the market and operationally struggled, which led to lower profits. So that's really important to really understand the players we have, the team we have in those markets, and we need to have both of them working at a higher level. And this will be achieved by executive guidance, proper reporting and metrics, which will lead to accountability in each of those markets. I've done this before, and I expect to see results in the next 2 quarters, so look for that. One other thing I wanted to mention, just to give you some insight to the tremendous upside of these markets, according to the Direct Selling News website, the Asia-Pacific region, which, again, we just launched several of those countries recently, accounted for $83.8 billion of the world's direct selling sales in 2016, compared to North America's sales of $37.5 billion. That region alone is more than double North America and, again, demonstrates the potential for the international markets here at Longevity. Again, I'm excited to be part of the team, and I'm going to turn the call back over to Dave to provide future updates or other updates on the coffee segment.
Thank you, Luke, and I appreciate that. And you know, Luke is definitely going to be a regular speaker and a regular participant going forward because we have so much focus on the growth coming from international. And one of the things that Luke is working on is literally a really keen set of procedures, a profitability plan, a growth strategy for each market. So I feel confident in the coming quarters we can be very, very specific about the markets, how we're performing, where our growth is coming from, and in the inverse, if we're in a market that maybe isn't achieving our expectations. I think our shareholder base deserves to hear the real progress that's coming from these global markets, and certainly as we start to move, you know, from the 10% to the 15 and maybe 20% numbers, that story and with those metrics will be something that will be something our shareholder base will be interested in hearing about. Before I go on to the coffee sector, I wanted to mention that on the international footprint that Luke talked about, there's 23 countries in the world that are over $1 billion in retail sales in the direct selling space. And I went through our list of countries, and we are in 13 of those countries. So we're over 50% of our position are in the countries that generate $1 billion or more in revenue. And so I feel good that we are in the markets that can deliver the sales if we execute. So we certainly, you know, I feel like our homework was done right in the beginning, and now it's time to step on the gas in these countries and get a return on the investment that we've been making over the last 2.5 years or so. In terms of the coffee business, the coffee sales, as we said in the beginning of the call, grew about 9.3% over 2016, so we've had a decent growth spurt there in the coffee business. This was driven by a number of areas. Many of you know that we signed a deal with the Major League Baseball's Florida Marlins and our Cafe La Rica, our own brand, Espresso. One of the major initiatives for our coffee business is to grow the value of our own brands. We feel there's tremendous value to be unlocked for shareholders, tremendous value to be unlocked for our company. It creates a more stable position at retail when your own brands are being marketed there, and once you grab onto that shelf space, you want to hang on to that shelf space. The hardest part is grabbing onto it. And this relationship with Major League Baseball has definitely exceeded our expectations. Of course, we're the official cafecito of the Miami Marlins or the Florida Marlins, and this has led to a co-branding relationship with Major League Baseball's Florida Marlins, and having our brand alongside such a brand of that stature has definitely elevated our brand. And therefore, it's really predominantly grabbed two areas of major increases for Cafe La Rica. The first is in the food service business. This is an area that we have wanted to get into in a big way for a long time as a company. Food service drives retail brand. You really want to do them in tandem. And what we talk about the food service, we're talking about restaurants and cafeterias and places where people are actually drinking your coffee, not packaged, but drinking it right from the cup. And you have tabletops and banner ads and information, and the cups are branded your Cafe La Rica. So as people are enjoying the coffee, the idea is when they're shopping at retail, they recall that good coffee drinking experience, and it drives your retail business. So you have to kind of do them together. And we have added, since the Miami Marlins deal, so that was in April, in this quarter, we've added 53 food service accounts and are currently adding 4 accounts a week to our food service division. This is important for a couple of reasons, and one of the biggest reasons is the highest profitability end of the coffee business is in food service. So it's an area we really want to focus on growing, and of course it'll drive our retail brand business. And the advantage of the retail brand business, although not as high in profitability, it's very, very high in creating shareholder value because brands today, especially consumer brands at retail, can bring tremendous value to a company as you would to maybe sell off a brand or spin off a division. So it's very difficult to build a retail brand. things that are driving or keys for that is this relationship that we formed. There's a press release out on this recently with Escaso out of Spain, and they are one of the premier espresso equipment manufacturers in the world. And we were able to create an exclusive relationship with this company where we're the only food service company distributing this particular espresso equipment along with our own brand of espresso in that very lucrative South Florida market, all through Florida, in fact. And Florida is a key place for growing an espresso brand because the number of different Latino cultures that live there, and it really does drive great business to retail. In terms of Cafe La Rica, our 10-ounce brick pack, and I'm looking at specifically last year, 2016, in the second quarter, we sold about 109,000 units of Cafe La Rica in that quarter. This past quarter, largely attributable to the relationship with the Florida Marlins, and of course the food service business that now is driving traffic into these stores, our second quarter for this year, we've sold 336,000 units of our espresso. So the increase over prior is 209% over last year. That really does a lot for our brand. And more encouraging than the fact that we've had that type of sell-in is the sell-through. Based on the metrics we've been gaining from our retail partners, we've moved from the number 5 espresso brand in the market to number 2, just behind Bustelo and actually ahead of Pilon and Lava. So our product is not only on the shelves, but it is moving off the shelves into the hands of the consumers. So we intend on really focusing on that and trying to continue to grow that business and build the value of that particular brand. In anticipation of growth in the rest of our coffee business outside of espresso, particularly in the K-Cup business, we are very excited about another announcement that was made in this quarter, which is a relationship with Damon Worldwide, who is really one of the largest, if not the largest, distributor or rep group or representative group of selling coffee in all of major retailers. They literally have offices in places like Target and in companies of really large scale. And literally since the beginning of me being in coffee business, it's a relationship that I hope to establish. And possibly because of the relationship with Major League Baseball and our brand, we were able to get Damon to be our representative group nationwide for both of our brands, that being Cafe La Rica and Josie's Java House, as well as private label. And so since we've signed them, and it's been a very, very short period of time, the opportunity to bid on business has really been intriguing for us to the tune of very significant volume. Once again, I caution you, we have not won these bids, but we have the opportunity just since they've come aboard. We've bid on over $9 million of different coffee contracts over 5 major retailers, which I won't name, but obviously if we land one of these relationships and accounts, we'll put the news out quickly, but in years past, we have not had the opportunity to bid on these sizes of accounts, which are very focused on the K-Cup single-serve business and the bag business. So in anticipation that this growth is forthcoming, we've invested in a robotic arm or a robot to help us do the packaging, because the K-Cup equipment we have is so fast, producing over 200 cups a minute, the pack-out can get very expensive just using human labor. So we've made a $500,000 investment in this robot to do the pack-out for us, and it will be in September. We also had to buy an additional commercial coffee grinder of $100,000 because of the increase of our espresso selling at retail. We needed to keep up with the demand there. And we invested in a machine that will wrap our bricks together so that when we ship them, we won't have any damage issues. So we've had about $643,000 of additional CapEx funding going into Cafe La Rica and CLR Roasters in anticipation of some growth there. Green coffee sales was also up over last year. Last year we did about $3,256,000 of sales in the second quarter of this year were just under $3.5 million, or about 6.14% growth. So, you know, good things happening with the coffee business. The real story on coffee is now to focus on these higher profit businesses and really start to drive revenue not only on the top line, but to have the coffee business start to put EBITDA numbers into the company that will, you know, help the profitability. Obviously, that's the story for Youngevity now. People will be watching our growth, but are also going to want to see improvement in adjusted EBITDA and, of course, net income. So everything we're doing now and into the next couple of quarters and certainly into next year will be driving those metrics. You know, I look at the couple of soft quarters and this pickup in Q2, we pretty much finished the year just a little bit behind last year. But as I look into Q3 and Q4, I feel very, very good based on the early read of Q3 and what's going on in the international markets as we see that that metric starting to improve. I feel very confident that although we started the year a little bit slow, that we will finish the year ahead of last year and actually have our seventh year of sustained growth. And it's good to see that, and that's what we're working hard to doing. With that, I would like to turn the call back over to Steve Wallach for some final comments.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you for, again, that update on the coffee operations, and thank you, Luke, for the comments and updates about yourself and international and the potential of international. And with that, I'd like to close this call out, and I look forward to the next one. So everybody have a great afternoon, and thank you for attending our shareholder call.